Are you looking for an escape from manufactured truth wrapped in selfish agenda? Don't you just want to have a real and raw conversation, all masks and rules aside? That's what you're getting here at Titan Evolution Podcast. Get rid of all the nonsense information and discuss everything under the sun without filters. Listen to real stories of real people who will put your current perspectives to the test, guide you on living the life you truly want, and see everything free from judgment and pretenses. Time to get rid of those unhealthy environments and let your authentic self shine. Here are your hosts, Travis Johnson and Carol Carpenter.
You just got to call off a call with your advisors?
I did. Yeah. And so usually that means more shit for me to do.
They just give you homework, right?
Well, you know, there's a lot of stuff like in the planning process now because we're launching this book and we're holding it back. So right now for us, originally we were going to try to launch it when we did the TED Talks and stuff in Wilmington, Delaware. We found like we were pushing a deadline that was unrealistic. So we're just like, screw it. Let's shelve it until we're done with that and going to a mastermind class, come back. And other things started hitting the fan as well. So it was just like, okay, hold up. We do need to let this book go out. We need to order proof. So right now we're in the proof stage. We're ordering proofs of the actual book so that we can get a fine-tooth comb through it, even though it's been edited by an editor and everything. So just to, you know, make sure every single thing is perfect before we launch it. And we have a campaign that we're doing too. So
how long have you been working on this book?
Okay, so here's the thing. I knew people that told me it would take me years for me to write this book. Mm-hmm. It took me a year to write this book. And it actually was so much content that we split it up between two books.
Oh.
So this is only one half.
This is only one half of the life and times of Carol Carpenter.
Well, no, there, because that would take a lot more because I'm older, way older than you, buddy.
So. Whoa. What do you mean way older than me? You look younger than me. I don't even know what you're talking about.
So, yeah, that's the reason why we're just like, okay, split the book up. Let's launch the first part of it. And that took some doing, too, because obviously book covers come into it. And being able to pick a book cover that resonates with people, that'll gain interest, right? So we went through several versions. I feel bad. I actually feel really bad for my cover art girl because we kept going, no, yes, no, change this color, change that color. In the end, if we had just like stuck, yeah, right, and gone with it, I think we could have actually finished that process in like 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Instead, it took us like a month.
It's quite the process. It's not just putting like ink to paper or transcribing this, that, or the other. It's not like any of that stuff. Like, it's a whole process. You got to write it. You got to frame it out. You got to re-go back over. You got to see which areas you want to be more in depth with. Then you've got the editor and the cover art. And is the tone the same throughout the whole book? And is it reaching the message that you're wanting to convey and all this other crap? And here you are a year-ish later and it's still not launched yet.
So our new launch date officially today is July 5th.
Okay. So we're coming out right about a month from now.
Well, that was the call today. Again, this is my homework, right? I love the fire that they start under my ass and they're like, go. And I'm like, okay, shit. So we've got that going on. I was just asked, I just checked my text messages before I came on. I just was asked by somebody to be featured in the first initial magazine. They want me to write
a lifestyle magazine we've been talking about.
Yeah, the lifestyle magazine. So it's going to be the pilot. Basically, if it were a show, it'd be a pilot one, right? So what do they call that for a magazine?
The first issue
edition. First issue. Know. First edition.
I'm not in charge of that stuff. They didn't ask me.
You're upset because you weren't asked?
No, I'm not upset because I wasn't asked. Like, they didn't, no one ran this by Travis. No one's like, oh, we should get Travis's ticket. Like, that doesn't happen. Like, I don't know what they call their first issue or why they do it.
Yes, it does, hon. Yes, it does. It's just, I've been in it for a while, right? So I kind of know the ins and outs also. And the individual that's asking me, I have a great deal of respect for. And so I feel really honored that he asked me. And it was funny because he asked me and then he goes, I understand if you don't have enough time. I'm like, huh, no, but I'm going to do it. Because to me, any opportunity that allows me to have a voice or be able to show, you know, not just what I do, but who I'm about, of course I'm going to do it. It doesn't matter. I'll find time. I'll make time. I'll sleep later. I don't care. If it's a cause that's important to you, it's just like anything else. You'll do it.
I got to wonder why there's people out there that turn down interviews.
Oh my God.
Just stacked, right? Unless you're just completely booked out. There's people that turn down interviews all the time. And I'm like, you never know what new audience you're going to reach. You're never going to know who you're going to impact. You never know what the result of the interview is going to be. Like, why turn down interviews?
I think people are fearful. If you want to get down to the gist of it, people are scared. And if you're scared, you tend not to do because there's a certain light you want to project to people, right? Oh, I'm this person. And maybe I'm not feeling my best today. Maybe I'm having a shitty hair day. Maybe, you know, I'm on my period and I'm bloated. Thank God I don't have that anymore.
Yeah, me either.
I'm sure there's something that makes them, you know, say no. But to me, it's like, God, if somebody is giving you an opportunity, why would you reject that opportunity? It's just a little bit like us, you know, talking about doing this together.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You know, I was like, fuck, I really don't know you that well, but I really like you. And I'm like, let's do this, man. And you're like, cool. I'm like, is that yes? Is that no? What does that mean exactly?
Look, I don't know. I'm just making it up as we go. I mean, there's only two real reasons that people do something, you know, pleasure or pain. But the barriers to resistance, they're all either fear-based in the amygdala, they are habit-based, or they're sociological barriers. Those are the only three reasons people don't do things. But you mentioned, why would someone turn down an opportunity? And there's a thing called opportunity cost. For every opportunity you say yes to, that means that time that it takes, the headspace, the capacity that it takes, means you have to say no to something else during that same time.
I disagree with that, though.
Well, if I say yes to a college degree where I have to go in person, all of that time spent in class means I can't be doing other things.
True. But I'm not talking about, you know, this late in life to be going after a college degree. I'm talking about if somebody is asking you to do an interview, right? Because we're not talking about taking a college course. We're talking about why would you turn down an opportunity to, you know, do an article, do an interview. I was just asked 2 days ago. So this is my crazy world right now, okay? And I'll put it in a nutshell. 2 days ago, I was asked to contribute to a leadership series, authorship, right? And do a contributing chapter towards vertical growth. And I was like, yes, why wouldn't I do that? Because I'm you know, trying to launch a book too. Why wouldn't I piggyback this with that? I mean, I'd be a freaking idiot, right? So I'm doing that too. And it actually works out because I wrote so many chapters that actually talk about business within the book. So I literally could handpick one of those chapters, right? Write about it, reframe it as a full chapter instead of a part of a book that they're, you know, solely progressively reading, and put it into this leadership series. And why wouldn't I do that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
Headspace, yeah. But, and then of course, then that flows into the article that they're asking me to write for, you know, the first episode of that magazine, right? This all goes into, like, I have my track season starting and I have events coming up Sunday and Monday. This is my crazy life. When it all comes in, I feel like it's all coming in now.
See, this was bothering me. I had to look it up and Google what the first issue of a magazine called. It's called the Premier Issue.
Thank you. Okay.
I had to look it up. I didn't want to be the guy that just doesn't know stuff. Like, I want to know. I want to find out everything there is to know people, what makes them tick, why they do what things they do, how they decided, how they feel about a certain thing. if we disagree, I want to figure out what it is that happened in your life that hasn't happened in my life. Like, am I missing something? Am I missing a piece of the puzzle? Because my...
what you experience, what I experience is going to be different.
Yes.
So if you experiencing something different than me is, it gives you insight. I want to know why you have that insight.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's so much in the media right now, and the media, like in general, I feel is just the fringes, the far left, the far left, the crazy, like aliens, right? The far out stuff that people are talking about is really not the opinion of the masses. And I feel like there's so much fear-based media out there. They're just whatever thing that you watch, they're only showing you the things that you're afraid of. Is that what you see?
Yeah. Well, why do you think they're doing that?
I don't know. Why do you think they're doing it?
Well, I personally, oh, really? Yeah. Are we going to do the,
tell me more, Carol.
Anytime you base anything around fear, you can feed information.
Oh.
If it even remotely looks logical, people will latch onto it. Now, it doesn't have to be logical, but if it remotely has a sense of being logical, people will latch on. I think these days, there's so much information, it's really hard to tell what information
is. Well, now we're just into the soundbite culture. If you can make a quick soundbite that people can remember and latch onto, the soundbite is going to trump anything that other people say, because the soundbite is going to make more sense and it's easier to remember than the actual argument or the thing. You know what I mean? Like, you can have a whole speech about gun control, but right, if you can distill it down to library cards or guns are easier to get than library cards, you're going to remember that little thing, regardless of the validity of the statement or not, because that's what you're going to remember, that little soundbite.
Yeah, I think it's sad that we've come to that. Our attention span is so short and small that we're unable to process actually things that are logical. Maybe it's because people don't want to, you know, actually believe in it, because that means they'd have to believe in something that's not necessarily a happy thought, right? But life isn't rainbows and unicorns. That's all I got to say.
I was talking to my friend a couple of weeks ago, and they were talking about the differences between, let's say, the some of the first quote unquote Americans when America was beginning country, you know, in the 1700s. If we talked to them, if we went back in time and talked to them as Americans, having a conversation, they wouldn't be able to understand us. We process terabytes of information all day long. There is so much going on. There's so many things in our houses. There's so many things that we see and encounter, so much stuff on the media compared to what we experience in a day is more information than they would gather in their lifetime. And we literally wouldn't be able to have a conversation with them. The vernacular would be different. It would be like we were speaking a completely different language just based on all the things that we've experienced and encountered. It's bananas. So I've been thinking about potential names for this show that Carol and Travis are co-hosting. And I was trying to figure out combinations of different things. I love alliteration, like Dunkin' Donuts, Krispy Kreme. They start with the same letter. So I was thinking like Titans Travel and Triumphs, Speed and Skill, Adrenaline Academy, Adrenaline and Anxiety, Adrenaline Adventure, Vixens and Victory, or Technical Challenges for Generation X. One of those things could be the name.
You want to know something? Becoming Titans is not entirely bad. You know, I mean, truthfully, Becoming Titans, you know, we talked about this when we were in Texas, and everybody's so used to giving their spiel when they meet each other, right? And the spiel usually is what I'm doing now. And it's a verbal like diarrhea dump, right? And you have like the minute, quote unquote, the minute, you know, that you can just kind of do your quick little, what do I do?
Your elevator pitch.
The elevator pitch right? I always thought that was the stupidest name for it anyways. What, you trapping somebody in an elevator to pitch them? I don't know. So I'm like, I got tired of hearing everybody tell me what they were doing, because I really wasn't interested in what they were doing. I was more interested in them as a person, because if I connect with you, then we do business together, right?
Yeah.
We'll find some way to do business together. It doesn't matter what industry you're in. Eventually, we all bump into each other again. There's ways to incorporate that. And it just because I'm not in your industry doesn't mean that we can't find some way to do a collaboration.
Yeah. Like you and I are not in any kind of crossover whatsoever.
No, but there's a beauty in that. It doesn't have to be a crossover, right? Mm-hmm. And we can bring two complete separate industries together because of that. They're thinking about, oh, can you benefit me? Can it be mutually beneficial? Well, everything can be mutually beneficial. It just depends on how you frame it.
Do you even get along? Do you like each other? Do you build a relationship? If you can build a relationship, all the other stuff is going to follow.
Always falls into place. My girlfriend and I, Aliki, love her. The reason why we became friends was we're in the same industry. We're both women in our industry. When we started talking, our commonality was, I don't give a shit about making money right now. I really give a shit about making a difference. Money will always come. You just have to be passionate and you have to care. You have to be that driving force to do it, right? When we first started talking, I was like, fuck, I love this woman. Like, I want to work with this woman. And we have since become the best of friends because our viewpoints are so similar in how we feel about this industry. Money will come. Money ebbs and flows. That's it. People treat money as if it's like the be all end all of things. Guess what? When the stock market crashes, are you still going to be okay? Depends. How much did you put, you know, your value into money?
It's this whole external validation, right? Oh, the stock market's up. Oh, the stock market's down. Oh, the weather. Oh, or who the president is. Or none of that stuff has really ever affected me. I know it's affected some people, but I know that when the stock market crashes, there's people making millions of dollars. I know when the stock market's at the highest it can be, there's still people going broke. I know when it rains, people in the city gripe, but when it rains in the country, farmers are like, yes, I don't have to pay. I don't have to pay to irrigate my crops today.
Right.
There's
a positive, even to negative situations. And people have gotten so used to this really pessimistic and negative view, you know, because it just seems to be, I don't know, it feels like a blanket on society right now, right? And it's like, well, hey, look at what you think is a negative and think about the opportunities that can come from it. Because people don't look at the opportunities, the positives of it. And I think that's truthfully, if you want, my opinion is why entrepreneurs are wired the way they are. Because when the negative situation comes up, they're like, how do I make this a positive?
Yeah. How do I make this work for me? What were some of the positive things that came out of COVID?
For me?
Sure.
Relationships, time to learn, you know, increase my education. Obviously, time to spend with my friends and family that, you know, yes, we had to be apart, but we would talk for hours on the phone. And it was a way to reconnect with people. Usually we live in such a busy society and our work or several different projects we have going on, right? Everything just halted then. And it allowed me time to even go back and do yoga on a daily basis again, right? It allowed me to do things that usually I'm like, oh my God, I don't have enough time for that, right? And I'll squeeze it in or I'll feel guilty, right? I didn't feel guilt at all during that time, you know? And it was just like, well, the whole world's frozen right now. I can't travel. I can't do anything. So why not just nurture the relationships that I currently have because and let them know that I treasure and cherish them?
Oh, yeah, that's beautiful. I absolutely love that. I noticed for me that corporations lost this kind of like stronghold grip they had on their employees by allowing them to work remote. And now there's so many more people not tied to a dumbass office building where they have to get up, do all this stuff, rush downtown to do all these things. Like we got more flexibility, especially like people that are single parents were able to log the hours they needed to log in a day. And they weren't tied to a building where they had to rush across town to do something. They could work out of their house or at the coffee shop across from the school. So if something happened, they could simply log off, go do the thing and not worry about taking time off of work to go run errands and all that nonsense. You could have a high paying job at a firm in New York City, but you could live in Kansas. And someone might be listening. Well, I don't know why anyone from New York City would want to live in Kansas. Because it's dirt ass cheap. You can get a place for $1,100 a month and still be making $300,000 like in New York City and have Midwest prices. I mean, why wouldn't that be desirable?
Yeah.
Money you save on rent alone allows you to travel and go to shows if you really want to, like whatever the New York society life or whatever. Like, but you have that option. Like, I retired from the Navy and got into podcasting. If I get hired to go speak at a conference in Rio, I say this a lot because I want someone to hire me to go speak at a conference in Rio. But if I get down there and I'm like, this is great, I want to spend 3 weeks in Rio, I can, because I don't have to go to some stupid office building every damn day.
Well, and that commute alone, it takes time away from your family. It's time you don't get back. So I understand why people don't want to go back to that commuting, you know, lifestyle, right? That being said, there are people here, like, you know, that work for big corporations that are now used to staying at home and working remotely. And when their corporations have asked them to come back to an actual workplace, they basically told them to kick rocks and they quit. It's crazy.
Or the company realizes that if they can get the same amount of stuff or more stuff done and lower the rent, the overhead they have by having a paid for building, you might save $10,000 a month or more off of billing, insurance, lighting, air, having the donut, I don't know, the donut see people eat over, like all that overhead can be slashed by transitioning to remote workers. And if you don't have to be in person, right? Like MotoVixens, you got to be in person for a track day, right? If you're going to be in track day, like you got to show up, right? But the vast majority of businesses, you don't have to be there.
My businesses run remotely.
Yes. Right?
And besides the actual days of those events, I can take my computer and work anywhere, like anywhere.
Yes.
So, and to write a book, I'm sorry, take my computer and go anywhere. To write an article, same thing. To do a podcast with you, I can take all my crap and go with me, right? I can work remotely anywhere. So why would I choose to pay for a lease at an office building, pay for all the utilities, everything that we need? And then why would I do that, right? Why wouldn't I spend that money elsewhere? Like, possibly hiring somebody else.
Yes, absolutely. There's so many ways that this remote opportunity, especially like everyone's quality of Zoom proficiency went up. People got nicer cameras. People bought fancy microphones. Yeah, your Zoom proficiency is super low, but we're going to be working on that.
I know. I am so sorry.
Hey, Carol, you want to log into Zoom? Like, can't worky, I don't know, buttons.
Well, we're sitting there like hand signaling each other, like, pick up your goddamn phone. I got to talk to you. We clearly can't reach. It's okay. I am not known for my technology, like abilities, but I also am very well aware. I stay in my lane and I'm really good at the things that I do. So
important thing to talk about right there is knowing what you're actually good at.
Yes.
And knowing what you suck at, so you can do the things.
Don't be delusional and say, fucking good at everything.
Well, I'm good at everything. Look how amazing I am. Nobody's good at everything. Nobody's good at everything. Find the things that you're great at, hire out the rest, or don't do it, and see what happens. And see if someone else can operate in that zone of genius that you don't have.
Well, and two, then you can focus. Right. If you focus on the things that you're good at, you'll shine no matter what.
Yeah, absolutely. Shine. Without a doubt.
But if you try to do everything and you're 10% of everything, you suck at everything. Literally.
Well, I like being a jack or Jill of all trades. I love being a Renaissance man. I love to be. That's great for hobbies. But if you're getting into business and the things that you're really trying to make money at or whatever the thing is, like, do you think Michael Phelps is great at what? I don't know. He's phenomenal at swimming, right? Absolutely. He's designed for it. He's built for it. He's trained for it. But anywhere else, like, what is he great at? Like, I don't know off the top of my head. I don't know Michael Phelps personally, but do you think he did his own PR work?
Oh, I'm going to guess no.
I'm going to guess no. I'm not saying that he is or is not good at PR work. I have no idea. But he's great at swimming.
Yes.
Right? He hired a swimming coach, regardless of how good he was. He had a swimming coach. He had people that did PR work. He had probably an agent that got him sponsorship deals, all this, that, and the other. He's not going to spend his time in the room with people at, I don't know, Speedo, talking about the details of the deal they're going to put together. He's going to send his agent in there to do that work for him, because that's what the agent is good at.
Precisely, because his focus should be on swimming.
That's right. That's right.
Right.
I don't know where I'm going. I don't know where I was going with that.
Okay. But. Oh, okay. So you were going somewhere. I was going
somewhere.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And then I don't know what happened. Oh, yeah. That's the thing you're good at. People do the other things that they're good at.
Stay in your lane.
Well, that's a perfect swimming metaphor, right? Stay in your lane.
A great transition right there. So, hey, listen, we talked about, like, you know, earlier on in this, that this was all wanting to hear people's stories and getting to know people, because quite honestly, what are we? As people walking around, we're a culmination of our life and the stories that come along with it, right? And I know when we started talking about doing this, we were talking about how we related to people in Texas. I did really want to, like, get to know that person, like what made them what they are now, right? Because a lot of people see you in the present. If they see you as a successful individual, they'll look at you and go, oh, you were given that opportunity. You're just lucky, right? They'll find excuses as to why you are in the position you're in, and always discounting the fact that you've worked your ass off and you've gone through probably tremendous adversity and overcome quite a bit of it all on your own, if not with the help of others, right? So I've always been interested in people's stories. And I think more so right now, because of the fact that I had to write this book about myself. And I'm going to be honest with you, Travis, when I wrote this book, it was with great intrepidation. Like a little kid throwing a motherfucking tantrum on the ground. For a year, they had asked me to write a book because they knew a little bit about my back history, right? And I was like, no. I think there's a lot of fear and a lot of shame that goes behind it, because you hide the version of you that struggled to get to where you are. And then you wonder when you get there, why am I hiding? Is there shame in knowing how you got there? I mean, there is so much that all of us have gone through that we don't share with people. And there was it for a year. I remember them asking me to write this book. And I said, no. I don't want people knowing this side of me. I don't want people hearing about the things that happened to me growing up. But then you have to ask yourself, why are you so afraid to share these with at this point? And I'll be honest with you, when I turned 50, it was a couple of years ago, when I turned 50, a lot of things changed. And it was almost like my mind did a switch and said, fuck it. At this point, who cares? And why keep a secret? Because it's really not a secret. The people that really know you know, right? And then for the others, I can't make everybody happy. People are going to be freaking opinionated. Why do I care? I don't. I really just don't anymore. So anyways, coming back, you know, going full circle, this is the reason why I kind of wanted to do this with you, because like I heard your story and it literally blew my freaking mind. And as I got to know each individual in Texas and hearing their story, you don't realize, like, everybody keeps everything really close to the chest, right? And they don't discuss what's going on in their lives. And then when you finally hear from them what has gone on, I mean, people I looked at that I actually, like, put in a box. I put in a little box and I thought, oh, he kind of fits in this category here, without ever speaking to them. And then the minute I spoke to him, I was like, fuck it. I don't even know who I'm talking to anymore, because it's like, who are you? And you went through what? It's so freaking insane, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but that's what we do as animals. As soon as we meet something, encounter something, we put it in a, we categorize it, because that's just how we are. We got to know if it's safe, if it's dangerous, or whatever the thing is, because the sooner we can do that as humans, the easier we can function, right?
It's for our survival. I mean, we classify people as friend or foe, haunches up, or we're okay. Like, dude, let's just hang out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Take a Rubik's Cube, for example, that's all messed up. Some people look at it like, I'm not messing with that even in the slightest. No. I actually got one right over here. You know, they look at this thing and they're like, oh my God, like, how could I possibly, like, I can't do that. And they write it off instantly as something that they can't do. It's not for them, whatever the thing is. And then other people look at it and like, ooh,
let me figure that out.
Like, I want to figure that out. Like, I want to know how to do the thing. But this, if you notice it, like, I've been able to solve this for a couple of years now. I had a friend of mine show me in the Navy, because I'm one of those guys that like, I want to figure that thing out. Like, what is that thing all about? And you will see that when I talk about it with some people, immediately they're like, nope, can't do it. Don't try. Just take off the stickers, blah, 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 blah. But they categorize it instantly because they have to put it somewhere in their head. They have to know what it is, what it isn't, if it applies to them, if it doesn't apply to them, whatever the thing is, regardless of the advantages of learning how to like solve something like this.
Exactly. But that's the beauty of it. Everybody's. And so I know when we started talking about this, which was awesome, really wanted to delve into getting to know people. And that's why, you know, when you talked to me originally about becoming Titans, I was like, oh, if we're going to talk about stories, becoming Titans, not so bad. I know I threw out emerging Titans, but the truth is, it's about becoming and the stories it takes to get there and the struggles that you've gone through. And everybody's got a story, you know. Some of it's pretty sketch. Like, I heard a couple of people's stories where I'm like, how the hell are you even here? But like, the fact you survived it is kudos enough, right? But God, crazy. Well,
and you never know. You never know by looking at someone what the story is. You never know. You never can tell. You know, if you look at someone like you, who is a beautiful woman, has acted in movies, has done stunt driving, who owns her own motorcycle racing team. If you look at that Carol and you're like, wow, like that's pretty cool, right? Oh, she must be this, or she must come from money, like the only female motorsports owner on the planet. Like, you can put you into a category right away, but that doesn't tell you anything about what it took you to get there. It doesn't tell you any of that stuff.
And it doesn't end. I mean, the funny thing is, people think that you get there and it ends, right? Well, no, you're scratching and clawing. And I mean, no joke, you're still fighting for your position even when you're there, you know?
Yeah.
And what people don't realize is, for me, it's in the industry I'm in, it is a daily struggle. You know, it is not something that I get to go, I'm here, fuck it, it's all good. No.
No.
I still fight every single day to keep, just at least to keep the position I'm in, because every day, and this is competition in any industry, somebody's trying to knock you down. Somebody wants your position, right? It's just like any other industry. It comes at a bigger price because I am really the only female in the Pacific Northwest that does this. So if they can get rid of me, then essentially the girls have no voice here anymore. And you know me. I mean, Travis, you know me. I'm kind of like I'm fucking not going to give up. Right. I refuse to. I won't.
Well, that's something with all entrepreneurs, right? The vision or the dream is bigger than all the fear. That's an entrepreneurial thing. If you're an entrepreneur, the dream is bigger than the fear. We all know there's two ways to have the biggest building in town. One is to build the biggest building in town. The other one is to knock down every building bigger than yours.
Yeah.
And that's how we operate as people, right? There's people that are out there to build the biggest building just straight up. And there's some that like, no, I'm just going to knock everyone else down on my way so I can have the biggest building.
Well, I'll take it one step further than you, right? In terms of that, I don't believe that you either have to be the biggest building or knock down every other building so that you are the biggest building. I believe you can find a different venue, a different place, a different location altogether. Because sometimes those fights aren't worth fighting, right? And so here, the perspective from how, you know, we functioned, which was, okay, so you're on their playing field and the game is rigged. Cool. So the game is rigged. Awesome. How about we don't play on that playing field? We create our own and we control how
change
the game
is. Change the venue, change the rules, change the situation, change the outcome. Yeah. Every time I was told no growing up or you can't do that, I don't know how you felt, but I got that big chip on the shoulder. It's like, oh, you think I can't? Watch me. Watch me do
that. That was exactly what I said. Fucking watch me. So challenge me and then watch me and then see how focused I am, because you now challenged me and now I'm pissed. And when I get pissed, I get driven. It's a motivator.
You get that emotion bigger than all of the roadblocks. If you can get the emotion bigger than the fear, bigger than the habits, bigger than the social constraints, you can get anything accomplished you want done.
But Travis, don't you think that the fear is based on your experiences? Like the degree of fear that you feel in certain situations also is directly proportionate to how you felt as a child, what you considered was fear, right?
I can see a lot of that. I can see the things that you know, experience fear throughout your life or your childhood. I can see it fear as conditioning, right?
Oh, conditioned without a doubt.
Social responses. Like, were you told this as a young woman? Most men are not told this. A lot of ladies I know are told this. It's not everyone, of course, but were you told that being nice is one of the most important things?
Well, I think that is inherent in being a woman. Like, that was part of, okay, women are nurturers. It's really important for all girls to come across as, you know, prim, proper, and cordial, right? Of course, you're supposed to be nice.
Right. But where I think a lot of people get in trouble is they put nice to mean to put others ahead of yourself. And I'm not talking about giving or not giving, but they do it at the detriment of self. And when I, oh yeah, did you do that?
Why? That's part of my culture.
Yeah, it's definitely part of your culture. For those that don't know, what's ABC stand for?
American born Chinese.
Okay. Yeah. So it's part of that culture, right? But a lot of ladies that grow up just in the US, and I'm talking about ladies. I know it's not all ladies or every lady, but
sure.
You know, you're taught that being nice is one of the most important things. And a lot of people put that to mean as if I treat people nice enough or if I love big enough, then people are going to love me. And that's just not how it works. They end up doing it to detriment of themselves.
They take advantage of it. Fuck, they take advantage of you because you're nice. Because you know what they think? They think you're gullible. I was actually told by an ex-boyfriend that I am super gullible because I'm so nice. And my thought was, please do not mistake my kindness for weakness. My kindness is actually a strength. If anything, I'll find out what you're made of out of my kindness. Because if you mistreat me, then I know who you are. I just learned something about you. So people that don't think that I'm, you know, oh yeah, I'm nice and I'm a pushover, I'm a doormat. No, I'm not. In the experience that I get from it, I know where I stand with you. I know where I'm going to categorize you in my life.
To the ladies that think nice is so important, I want to challenge the ladies out there, even the guys out there that feel this way. When was the last time you were nice to yourself first? When's the last time you were nice to yourself and set, created, and enforced your boundaries? When's the last time when people said, oh, I'm kind of crazy? When do you take that comment and believe them? When people show you who they are, believe them right up front. Oh, I love having meetings with people. One of my favorite things is just meeting new people. But they'll let some things slip, usually in that first conversation, that first time you hang out with somebody, like, oh yeah, I'm all about the drama. Perfect. I know that I'm a drama-free individual and I don't have people with drama in my life. So when they tell me, I believe them. They're like, hey man, you want to hang out? No, no, I don't want to hang out. Why not? You told me you're full of drama, that you're addicted to it. I don't have drama in my life. And when I say that, they don't think it applies to them. So they're confused as why I don't call and hang out.
Like, here's the thing. You just told me what you are. I think what it comes down to is listening, right? Just like you learn things about people within, you know, a few seconds, people can't help either highlight what they are or are not. And what's interesting is a lot of times, whether they highlight what they are or they aren't, is actually them like sending a beacon to you, like, I'm a fucktard, you know?
It's funny you say that. So the last year, it's like the middle of 2022, in January of 2021, I made the conscious decision to only surround myself with people with an abundant mindset.
Yes.
Anyone that was scarcity, fear, drama, survival mode. It's not that I cut them out of my lives. It's like I stopped responding. I wasn't harsh about it, but I wasn't going to spend my time with those people. And what it has done for me over the past year is all of my moods have been elevated. My level of conversations have been elevated. The people I've been able to meet and hang around with and do stuff like yourself, like, has been elevated. So all of the things in my life have been dictated. And this is most people, if we talk about barriers, the sociological barriers, the people you hang around with help dictate what goes on in your world. I remember growing up in trailer parks and foster homes, and the people that I met in the trailer park, I would hear some of these conversations that they were having. And it was always seemed to be about how everything in their life was someone else's fault. Oh, you know, the economy. Oh, my boss at work is a jerk. Oh, this, that, and the other. Like, it was always pointing the finger at someone else, and it never seemed to include personal responsibility.
Yeah. Unfortunately, people don't like to take responsibility for those actions, because then it sheds the light that I'm a failure, you know? And instead of owning that and saying, well, fuck, I don't want to be a failure. How do I get out of it? Right? They just dwell in it. And who wants to dwell in that?
Well, they're worried about whose fault it is, right?
Who cares whose fault it is? Get the fuck out of it.
Oh, see, I love that. I love that right there. Like, the situation, whatever terrible situation is, I've had them. I know that you've had them. Yeah. At the end of the day, I was like, look, it doesn't matter whose fault it is. It's my responsibility to heal from that situation, move forward and take care of my life, regardless of whose fault it was. Oh, the president, this, that, and the other. The president has only ever affected my life once, even 22 years in the military.
Yeah.
You know, 22 years in the military. It wasn't till like my 20th year that anything the president said even affected me. It wasn't till he decided, President Trump decided to kill the Iranian general Qasem Soleimani. And they were talking about strike packages into Iran. And I was stationed in the Kingdom of Bahrain. And he went on air saying, so like, he did that and my work weeks went up to 100 hours a week. Not fun. Yeah. No. Out of 168 hours, 100 of them were spent working in the week. But he came on the news and said, we've got 50 strike packages available for Iran. And I look at my buddy Jack, who's doing the planning for this stuff. I was like, hey, Jack, president said you got 50 packages. How many you got? He's like, oh, 32, and walks back into his planning room, right? But that situation was the only time the president's direct words have ever affected my life. We've got people that are like glued to the news, glued to whatever thing that they're being puppeted by the news, telling them how to feel.
But they don't want to take responsibility for their own actions. You know, by the way, they can say whatever they want to say. The economy can do whatever it wants to. At the end of the day, you are responsible for yourself and your family. What the fuck are you going to do?
It's like, well, the president's not a good leader or is a good leader. Well, it's like,
why are we
the president?
Blame?
The president's a title. It's a position. A position is not based on leadership. They didn't make it in there because they're a good leader.
Right.
They made it there because they got elected. The system is the way that it is to allow essentially only two people to run against each other. But it's not there because they're a leader. People say that office is the leader of the free world. But it doesn't say that in any of the documents that create and support who that office is and what that office does.
Right.
Just because they're the president of the United States does not mean they're a leader, well, or they are a poor leader or a good leader or an okay leader, or, you know, but it doesn't mean just because they're in that position that they're a great leader or are supposed to be.
Right.
Or are they supposed to be? I don't know. I'm not in charge of this.
Well, the hope is they would be, you know. I would love it if we had a government that was, you know, where leadership really, they took their leadership seriously. But at the end of the day, the president does not affect your life as directly as you think he does. And so, truthfully, isn't it time to stop playing the blame game and take some responsibility about your life? Stop watching the freaking news. It's going to affect you the way it's going to affect you. Sorry.
I'm under the impression that if something is that important, there will be some person in my life that will bring me the news that I need to hear.
You know, here I am so terrible, Travis, because at the end of the day, I don't like get on social media. I have to post things for my events and stuff like that. But I find there's so much trash in there that I really don't want to be on there. And unless I know, like, you know, it's my brother's anniversary coming up or something, you know, every so often I'll take a peek, right? And, and people I care about, yes, I'll take a peek. But I'm like, I don't want to know. And usually if it's really important, somebody goes, hey, did you see this? I'm like, no, but tell me about it, right? And then I'll get caught up because it's like, it's freaking depressing. There's so much over information and misinformation that is like, fuck, I don't want to hear it.
Well, when I look at the news and you break it down, essentially it's noteworthy events, weather and sports. Okay. It's almost an acronym for what they show, right? Noteworthy events are things that don't normally happen. So great interactions, people being good neighbors, you know, people raising money for a good cause, like all this stuff is not noteworthy because it happens all day, every day, right? No one reports that the 30,000 flights in America went great today. They only report the one bombing or shooting that happened at an airport, right? Because that's the noteworthy event. The fact that everything went as scheduled with no accidents, with no shootings, with everyone getting where they're supposed to go, that's not a noteworthy event. So they're not going to report it. So when they see something, so when they see something on the news, it's only something that happened that doesn't normally happen.
Right.
Right. We don't talk about the millions of school kids that are safe every day. Right. We talk about the one school shooting that's an anomaly. That's terrible. We're not saying it's not terrible, but they only post that because it doesn't normally happen.
Right.
It's not a noteworthy event. A regular school day is not a noteworthy event. Overseas, when I was stationed over in the Middle East, I asked a lot of people how they felt about the American president and what they saw about the news that comes out of America. Because when I was in America before I went, what did I hear about things in the Middle East? I only heard terrible things, right?
Until you got.
So when I got over there, I asked them what they heard about America. Fun fact, only terrible news makes it over the ocean. So all they hear about are things like 9/11 and school shootings and hurricanes wiping out the country. And if that's the only three news stories you get, what are you going to think about America?
It's a horrible place to live.
It's a horrible place to live. If all I hear about the Middle East is terrorism and terrible women rights, which there's a lot of that over there. Yeah. But like, if that's the only stories you hear when you go to the Middle East, like, you're scared. What you don't realize is there's families. Really, there's families everywhere. They take care of their kids. Their kids throw tantrums in the mall. They celebrate Christmas. I mean, Bahrain, they've got Santa's village set up and they're singing Christmas carols. What? Right? Is your face right there? But that's not in the news. That doesn't make it over there. Plus, what I didn't know is a majority of the people in the Middle East also speak English. So I had no problem communicating with people.
And here you get the misconception that you won't be able to communicate and make your way around.
Yeah, you get the fact that you hear this deserts, burqas, and terrorism. That's all you really hear about.
Exactly.
And I get over there and there's people walking around in plain clothes, women at the beach in bikinis, people in the mall in Dubai.
Are you kidding? Because like, that's not things that you hear about. Like, they got to cover up head to toe and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, really?
For those of you listening, watching this that haven't checked it out, go on to like Google Earth. And you can go to Iran and see people at carnivals in plain clothes eating cotton candy. Now, I'm not petitioning that we all of a sudden love Iran, but beyond politics and some religious stuff, by and large around the world, people are just people. They want to be relatively safe and secure. They want to have a good family. If they have kids, they want their kids to have a better life than they do. They want to make reasonably good money and their kids to get an education. Hashtag the entire world.
Exactly. Exactly. Isn't it funny? We're not very different, no matter where we live.
We are extremely different and extremely similar all at the same time.
Exactly.
Like, you are American born Chinese. I was born into trailer parks and foster homes, but we both have brown hair and brown eyes and we're hilarious and are a joy to talk to, right? As different as we are, we're so very much similar. Yeah,
exactly.
Yes.
It's so funny that people think, you know, and so my son, I love him, really. He's like, my baby, my youngest, is like a fucking jokester. Right? All the time. He thinks he's hilarious.
To
some degree, but we're not going to admit that. There was one day I was bitching and complaining on the way home and stuff like that. And he was like, he stops me and just without even a pause, he goes, "Hey, sounds like white people problems, mom." And I just started busting up because I'm like, God, have I turned into that? Like, literally, like, my problems are so, like, ridiculously simple that my son's like, really, mom, this is what you're complaining about? I laughed. I had to laugh because I'm like, oh, I love my kid. Like, he called me out.
That the hilarious accountability. But isn't it true that some of the stuff we kind of gripe about, like, in the grand scheme of things, like, is essentially a nothing. I'm going to tell you a story about my wife that may or may not get me in trouble. We were a young couple.
Get you in trouble. Yeah.
It's look, I got a couch right over there. if problems happen. So we're a young couple. We've got our daughter. Our daughter's, I'm assuming either an infant or a toddler. And we're in a house and I get home from work and I open the door to see my beloved standing there. And what, like, turned into a mushroom cloud. This big explosion happened. And it was all about a water cup that I left on the counter. She was trying really hard to keep a clean house. Very important to her. I understand. I feel for her, but I'm not going to get a glass of water and then just put it in the dishwasher. Right. And I know what happened
on the counter.
Right. Right. Well, she went in and out of the kitchen like 1,000 times that day. And every time she saw that cup, she just got a little bit more upset about it. Right. She saw it. She's like, oh, cup, you know, she'd go back in a few minutes later. Like, there's a cup. Like I can just picture. I can see it all happening. Her walking in and seeing this cup. So when I finally got home, it just came to a point where she exploded. And I was like, baby, you're getting a job. And she's like, but why? And started crying. I was like, because, baby, if our lives are so magical and so wonderful that the thing that you're exploding at me about is a water glass on the counter, then fucking our lives are amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, here's the thing about becoming a parent that, you know, most people that are parents know. When we lose our minds at, like that, it's not always logical. It's that we.
Well, it's never logical when we lose our minds, right?
Well, yes, I agree. But I'm saying, especially emotionally, we're sleep deprived.
Yes.
We are so sleep deprived at that point that nothing is logical and little shit like a water glass on the counter can make us lose it. And it doesn't take much, really, at that point when you're so sleep deprived. It doesn't take much. I knew instead of being angry, I would end up crying. So I would, like, you know, if I got a shower in, I'd be so happy I'd cry during that day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, no joke. Like, absurd. Like, I'm going, what is wrong with me? Like, I am so happy I get to take a shower daily, you know, but I have to put my child in a bassinet while my toddler's running around and I'm worried that he's going to kill the child, the baby, right?
Like, yeah. Well, you're like, crying out of joy and out of pain at the same time.
Like, what am I getting myself into, right? So I completely feel for your wife because I know where she was at that point in time.
Oh, yeah. I fully do too.
Nothing seems like it's supposed to be. Like, you can't figure it out. Like, what the fuck is happening to my life?
My heart goes out to new parents. My daughter is now 19 and married and out of the house, married to a wonderful guy named Jack. We don't know what the heck we're doing. No. The thing is crying. It's wet. It's hungry. It's uncomfortable. You know, when the babies are that young, everything is literally the worst experience of their life because their life is 10 minutes old, right? And like, everything's shocking. It's too bright. It's loud. It's scratchy. Everything is the worst moment of the baby's life. And yeah, it's your fault. And you have no clue how to fix it. None whatsoever.
Scrambling and trying anything you can to make it stop. Like, how do I make this stop crying? And you go down the checklist: hungry, change diaper, or burp, or you just go down this list of things, you know, to try to do to like alleviate the child's pain.
Too hot, too cold, need a nap.
Yeah.
For the new parents out there, if you're listening to this, it is okay to want to throw your baby out the window, but it's not okay to actually throw your baby out the window. It's okay to want to. It really is. That's perfectly okay.
Natural thing, by the way.
The natural response.
Yeah. Moments where it's like,
it's okay to feel that way.
Yeah.
Less okay to actually do it.
Well, it's not okay. Not less okay. It's not
okay. Far less okay. So far less that it's not okay to do that. But it's okay. Perfectly okay to want to have that feeling.
Yeah. We all do. Yeah. We have our moments where, you know, we just need a friend. Right. And I wasn't blessed with having my parents around, you know, because I lost my mother when I was 20. So I didn't have that extra help. And I tell you, I came across crazy a lot. Crazy was in me. I was channeling crazy because it was hard. It was all on me. And I was trying to figure it out. Honestly,
it's impossibly hard. You're sleep deprived. You have no idea what to do. It's screaming at you. It has only one indicator.
My then husband, now my ex-husband, traveled 85% of the year. So I was alone with a child and literally, 5 days after
military, I understand.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So then it's on you and you're just like, oh my God, what am I doing? Like, I'm a first time mom. What am I supposed to do? Right. Mm-hmm. And you beat yourself up and you think you're a bad parent. And by the way, parents, it's okay to think you're a bad parent because if you're
everyone thinks they're a bad parent.
Yeah. If you're a good parent, you tend to think you're a bad parent. So, there you go. You know, it's a rough go, man, you know, but guess what? They'll survive. And just like when I was potty training my kids, my grandmother always said, I was like, oh my God, I can't potty train one of my sons. The first one was having a hard time potty training while I was, you know, changing diapers for the second one. And he tested me all the time. I lived in the bathroom. Because literally I was changing diapers or putting a child on the potty, right? And I remember one day my older son came right to the edge where it's carpeted and there's tile, right? Tile inside the bathroom. And I'm changing the younger one's diaper. And he's like, I have to pee. And I'm like, okay, go into the bathroom, like literally right behind me and, you know, use the potty. He actually started crying and peed right on the carpet. An inch away from the tile.
But every parent has that story.
And I just sat there and I went, oh God, help me. Please God help me. Because I'm so sleep deprived. I'm changing diapers. I've got two boys. Oh my God. My husband's out here. Oh my God. I'm like going to lose my mind. And I just sat there and I just like, okay, fuck, whatever. I'll figure it out.
I got a pissed off call from my wife, Megan, when I was at work because we're potty training our daughter, Alyssa. And for those that don't know, that don't have kids yet or haven't gone through potty training, like every time you go to the bathroom, like you bring the kids in there with you so they can kind of see what's going on.
Right.
It's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to normalize it for them so they know where to go, know how to use the potty, all that stuff. So my wife calls me. She is super upset. And I did not help the situation because I was laughing my ass off because your daughter, you know what your daughter did? My daughter, a toddler, right? You know, walks around, bumps into stuff, still made of rubber, all those things. I was like, what happened, babe? She's like, we walked in the bathroom and I sat on the potty and Alyssa sat on the potty. And I always ask her, like, do you have to go potty? And she said, uh-huh. So she's like, well, you can use the potty too. So she stands up, turns around, puts her hand down by her groin, and then just pisses all over the floor because she was peeing like dad pees. Right?
Oh. No.
So I thought it was hilarious.
Oh, no.
Because I wasn't the one cleaning up the pee.
Was not good for you to laugh about that one. That one.
Oh, no, it definitely was not. Do not recommend. Guys out there, husbands out there, do not recommend laughing at this situation. I did. I'm still alive. Take it or leave it. Up to you. Make your own choices. You but I laughed my ass off and she was not happy.
Yeah.
But somehow less upset than the cup on the counter situation. So I don't know.
Oh, I didn't know that that would elicit less of a response than the cup on the counter. Oh my goodness. State of mind. All I can say is it had to do with state of mind at that point in time. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, when you call your spouse at work, which is should be a very rare occasion, like you have no idea what they're going through or doing at work, right? Wow. You don't know what state of mind they're in. You don't know what's going on. All you know is you're stressed out likely when you make this phone call. Yeah, sorry, babe. This is like been a really fun conversation, Carol. Here's the deal. If you're listening to this and you like hearing me and Carol BS about life, we're going to be interviewing people that have been through the ringer in life, have trudged through the depths of hell, somehow made it to where they are, achieved some level of success. We're going to bring people on. We're going to have some co-hosts and stuff. It's just me and Carol talking about life. We're going to have people that come on and they're going to share their amazing stories. And we're going to have all this kind of energy. And we're going to talk about all manner of things. Go ahead, hit the like or subscribe button, hit the share button, bring people in. We want to hear from you. We don't want to do this in a vacuum. We want you to send us messages on social media, send us messages on email, find us, track us down. Say, what do you want to hear us talk about? Who do you think would be a great guest? Who do you want to have on the show? What do you want to hear us to talk about? Do you want to talk about our past, our history, the things that we're doing? Do you want us to talk about why does Travis love tacos so much? And how did he survive 22 years in the military? Do you want to hear Carol on track day? Do you want to meet us for a track day? I plan on going up to a track day.
That's right.
To see Carol in person at some racetrack in Washington. I don't know which one. Yes. Let us know. Drop us a line. Tell us you liked it. Tell us you hate it. I don't care. Just tell us something. Interact. Be like, Travis, you're the stupidest host ever. We don't like you. Let me know so I can give the 1-star review, put it on a t-shirt with your name that says Travis is the worst host ever, because it's all about fun and having a great time and connecting with people and telling great stories. And what do you think about all that, Carol?
Perfect. You like that?
You like that? You want more of that? Well, there's plenty more where that came from, because we're going to do a show like this each and every week. We're going to have people on, not have people on. Sometimes we'll be talking to ourselves, whatever. Have a great rest of your week.
Right on.
That's all for this episode of Titan Evolution Podcast. We hope this no-holds-barred conversation opened your eyes on what it takes to live a genuinely happy life, according to your own terms. Now that you've treated yourself to such a refreshing discussion, you cannot listen to nonsense content anymore. Be sure not to miss an episode by subscribing to the show at TitanEvolutionPodcast.com. Don't forget to share the word so more people can be enlightened, informed, and entertained. Thank you for listening.